I'm not responsible for the music. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. It's not just a marathon, it's a 135-mile ultra-marathon that winds through three mountain pass ascents totaling over 17,000 feet of elevation gain, and it's considered the world's toughest foot race. The Badwater 135 was held in California last week. Three runners from Greater Cincinnati competed in the race, and joining us to share their experiences are Craig Wheeler, Jack Corey, and Harvey Lewis, who finished first in this year's Badwater 135. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. First off, I have to say congratulations to everybody here for actually finishing the race. That is a great accomplishment. And Harvey, congratulations to you for coming in first place.
Thank you.
Now, I'm curious, Harvey, what's an ultra marathon? What exactly is that? And how does that differ from the traditional marathons that people are so used to hearing about?
An ultra marathon is a race that's technically over a marathon distance of 26.2 miles. And typically you'll see 50Ks, like our own Stone Steps 50K in, right here at Mount Airy Forest. And you also have some 100 milers, and the Badwater is slightly over that distance with 135 miles.
So they can be anywhere between 50 miles and 100 miles or more, right?
Yeah, all the way up to one in New York right now it's happening is over 3,000 miles.
Seriously? Now,
yes.
That can't be a nonstop race, can it?
It is a nonstop race. I mean, you can stop as much as you wish, but it goes up to, you know, people are trying to achieve 3,000 miles.
That's amazing. Who came up with this crazy idea? What is the history of the ultra marathon? Anybody know that?
Really, I know the first one that I know of is Western States, and it was really a horse race, and the person's horse was lame, so he entered it as a foot race, and he completed 100 miles within 24 hours. It was called the Tevis Cup, and that still goes on. And now you have, now separately is a foot race called Western States.
Are ultra marathoners, Jack, are they a pretty tight-knit group? Does everybody know everybody? It sounds pretty exclusive.
Well, you know, you only get so many people who go out there and do that kind of thing. So you do bump into the same faces time after time, and it is a very close-knit group, yes.
Craig, I think there were, what, about 100 people running in this year's Badwater?
There was 100 people that applied and was accepted, or I shouldn't say applied, but accepted, and then 97 actually started the race.
And that's kind of a contrast, isn't it, Harvey? I mean, in a marathon, you might hear of hundreds and hundreds or maybe even thousands of people participating in something like the Boston Marathon or something like that, right?
Yeah, even our Cincinnati Flying Pig Marathon, I mean, for that entire weekend, we have something close to 30-some thousand participants in all the events happening. So this is, it's very rigorous to get into this race. I first applied back in 2007, and I didn't have a strong enough running credentials to get in the race. So they haven't exactly told us how many people apply, but historically, I mean, they have hundreds of people apply to the Badwater race, and only 98 are selected. So it's really amazing that we had three runners from Greater Cincinnati. That's unprecedented. There's no other city in the nation or world that was as well represented as our city. And also we had a 100% completion rate of every runner who's ever come from Cincinnati.
So I think that speaks volumes about the running community in Cincinnati, doesn't it?
Or sure their does. Mental state.
Craig, I'd be interested to know, how did you get started in running in ultra marathons?
Oh, I guess one foot in front of the other. The wife said I was gaining a little weight. I was on some cholesterol medicine and stuff, and I said, well, you know, I better start doing something. And so it started out with walking and then a little bit of running. And I remember I ran 2 miles and thought I was going to die. And I said, well, I'm never going to run 3 miles, but I'm going to keep running this 2 miles every day. And it kind of just grew from there.
Kind of like Forrest Gump. He just started running one day and he just kept going. Okay, so it was that easy.
It wasn't easy. It was, I'm going to tell you what, it wasn't fun at the time. My lungs and everything kept on saying, no, go back and watch Oprah and sit on the couch. But I said, now I'm going to try to do this. And, you know, the more and more you do it, the easier it does get. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you face any other obstacles besides the endurance factor?
No. Oh, no.
Just getting your
body
used to
doing
that kind of thing.
No, I don't ever get sore. I mean, everything always works out just fine.
Jack, how about you? What got you started running ultra marathons?
Actually, I had a sister whose husband passed away at age 30, and she wanted to run a marathon. And I thought running marathons was the stupidest thing in the world. But I told her I would run her short runs with her. And her definition of short and mine were very different. First time we went out, I did 3 miles. I could barely walk up the steps. And but eventually I did the relay at the Flying Pig and loved the atmosphere. So I said, I will do one marathon and I'm done. I'll never do another one. And did that and just kind of got hooked.
And kept going and kept going. So once again, kind of like Forrest Gump, you just kept running and running.
I ran
and
a marathon, said, I'm not crazy. It's those 100-mile people. They're crazy.
What was the first time you ran in something that would have been considered an ultramarathon length race?
I did the JFK 50, and a friend of mine, she turned 50. It was her 50th birthday. She wanted to do 50 miles on her 50th birthday, and I told her I'd drive to Winnebago and pick her up when she was done, and then it turned out that that race was also on my birthday, and I was 42, and I had 2 marathons in my name at that time, and it turned out better than I thought.
I understand you ran 150 miles for a fundraiser.
I did.
What's the story behind that?
It's
a long story,
happens,
right?
Yeah, as one thing happens, you kind of say it'd be nice to tie a purpose to some of this running. You know,
was that with your work with being a principal at your school?
It was. I attempted it last year, and I didn't. I had some stomach issues that sidelined me, so I got to 100. So the next year, I decided to raise some money for a plaque in our Rosary Garden for veterans, people who've served in the military, and got the parish involved, and the students were able to follow me. And so it just turned out well this time.
Harvey, tell us your story about getting started in ultramarathoning. I mean, it's pretty interesting, I would imagine.
Well, it really started when I was actually in high school. I was not a fast runner. In fact, usually I ran to try to not be the last one to finish, or the person to finish last. And on a whim, I decided I was going to go out and do the marathon. And so it all started really there with the marathon. And when I was 19, I decided I wanted to do something more. And that led me to the 24-hour race. My first 24-hour race was so difficult. I completed 82 miles. And the irony now is I can actually do 82 miles in under 12 hours. So I've improved that much over the last 17 years. And now I'm at the best I've ever been at age 38 and still getting better.
Well, that's pretty amazing because you and I have talked before. I know what happened to you about 10 years ago. You suffered a broken neck, and it's amazing to think that you're out there running these long distances after going through that.
Yeah, that lit another engine of fire. The breaking my neck, it just brought everything into focus and really made me want to work even more hard at it. So that was one of those life experiences that just made me so much stronger. I'm a way faster runner now than I was prior to breaking my neck.
Did it change how you think about things? Did that have something to do with that maybe?
Definitely. And these races, it's amazing. It's not necessarily the physical aspect, but the mental and the spirit that take you to where you're going. So, I mean, these guys can probably comment more on that, but it's such an incredibly daunting distance. The guy that was really hammering me from Australia the whole day, he's when you look at him, he doesn't look like someone who would be able to run that distance or as fast as he does, but he just has a level of mental toughness that's amazing. And a lot of the top runners are in their 40s. I mean, most of they would beat anyone in their 20s. And a lot of the 30-year-olds, like because they have more toughness and mental toughness.
Craig, you're in my age range. I think you're in your 50s. I'm amazed.
52.
Wow.
Yeah.
And don't have any problems with that. Just you, like you said, doesn't bug you that much. And
I guess it's all relative, you know.
It's all
kind of
try
to put the work in, and then at some point, yeah, you do go on. Like Harvey says, just the will to want to do it. I mean, my biggest thing was I had family and friends with me, and that really pushed me through. You know, it was I had a very hard race. It wasn't easy by any. 135 miles is a long
no,
way to go.
No.
And I had such a fantastic crew with me that it helped me and pushed me through. Because the guys I had with me weren't runners. You know, they were family and friends, and we were going out there, and you know, what I found out is it was a good thing I had them with me just to give me the will and the spirit to do it.
But they were your support crew, right?
They were my support crew, yes.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. There's a lot of wear and tear. Jack, do you have somebody that trains you on proper running form so that you don't hurt yourself quite as badly? Or
no, a lot of what I do, I learn from other runners. There's a wealth of information for people who have been doing this for years. I know of people who are in their 60s who are still running 100-mile races, and you try to glean from the people who've been there and done that to learn, because you're not going to find this type of information at your doctor's office. They're going to tell you, stop, don't do this. And
everybody's shaking their head, yeah.
But when you go out on a 100-mile run and here's a guy who's 63 who's been doing this for 20, 25 years, it's like, how do you survive these types of things? How do you take care of yourself? And if you listen to the people who've been there and done that, then you learn quite a bit. And everybody's kind of an experiment of one. You kind of learn what works for you and what doesn't. The type of shoes that work for me may not work for Harvey. And so you do a little bit of experimentation, but you listen to everybody around you.
Harvey, running 135 miles, that seems impossible enough. How do you deal with particularly something like Badwater, where it's hot and you have all these elevation changes? How do you deal with that kind of thing? I mean, you said it's in your head, but come on, there's got to be a little bit.
Having an amazing team really helps. Truthfully,
each of us
had a team of four people along with us, and Chris Cavanaugh was my crew chief, along with Matt Garrett and Kyle Farenkamp and Luke. They just put together a super team. Basically mile to 2 miles, they would pull over their vehicle and pass off drinks to me, shoot me with water, give me ice bandanas. I mean, it never stopped, and they were doing dancing and stuff in between, all this other jazz. I mean, how can you not have fun with that?
So you're saying the way this works is that you're running along and that you actually eat and you drink while
it's
you're
like
on the run.
It's like a nonstop party, basically, yeah. Now, don't ask Craig about what happened after last year's Badwater, because we got stuck out in the middle of nowhere in Death Valley National Park in the Ford Explorer that broke down.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
And luckily, the ranger just happened to be from Cincinnati.
And he really was fond of some chili. So yes, we had to mail out some chili after he rescued our vehicle.
Right.
Pulled us from the depths of the desert.
How many times have each of you run in Badwater?
This was my first.
First time
for you. I crewed for Ian Hughes, who works for P&G here locally. And, the first time I ever read about Badwater, I thought that was the stupidest thing a human being could ever do. And I was outpacing Ian. Last year was 128 degrees, the sand's blowing, the blacktop's probably 200 plus, and I enjoyed it. And I kept thinking, oh no.
You kept thinking, what's wrong with me?
Exactly. I'm like, but I still claim that I am the only normal person ever to run Badwater.
There is a runner's high.
Yes.
Mr. Clark Kent, huh?
Absolutely.
So is there ever a time when you're running in something like Badwater where you start to think, boy, I can't make it. I'm gonna quit, but yet somehow you find the way to keep going?
You pretty much try not to think that. So, I mean, it does get dark at times, there's no doubt, and that's where you rely on your support team, you rely on the family and friends you have back home. I mean, the big thing with me is I know a lot of people following on Facebook. I'm in a running group, Tri-State Running, and there was unbelievable the amount of support I got from them guys. It was just unbelievable. And to be honest with you, quitting wasn't an option.
How many times have you run in Badwater?
This is my first. This is my first time even being there. So I was a little naive on the whole situation. You know, YouTube video, you kind of look in this, but I'll be honest with you, you don't really know. My crew kept on saying, well, what do you want me to do? And I said, well, we're going to go out, we're going to watch the other crews around us, and we're going to say which one's doing the best job, and you're going to copy whatever they're doing. So it was a little bit naive on my part on just how much you have to be prepared and what you needed to do, because it's a different than a regular 100-mile race when you have aid stations set up. and people there to take care of you, that kind of stuff, versus having your own stuff and how to coordinate all that. It's different.
I'd have to think, too, that 100 miles is one thing, but then when you tack 35 more miles onto it, that's got to be a real...
Oh, I would have done great if I could have stopped at 100.
It's not just the distance. I don't know if you could maybe describe the mountains, but the mountains are just out of this world. And people ask me at the end, well, how in the world did you win this race? Because a lot of your competitors are living in Colorado or mountainous states, or they have like the epoxy tents. And I said, well, I live in Cincinnati.
We got the hills of Cincinnati.
That's right. Definitely. Look out.
How many times have you run this now, Harvey?
This is my fourth time.
Fourth time. Okay. And then how did you place the first three times?
First time I raced, I placed 11th overall. And then the last two times, I've placed fourth overall.
Okay.
This is first time winning.
So fourth time was a charm for you. You finally hit first place in
that. That's right.
Does Badwater live up to its billing as the world, they call it the world's toughest race. Is that true? Or have you seen things that are worse?
Well, that 3,000-mile race I was telling you about.
Yeah,
right,
that would be worse.
That could be kind of tough. But the thing is with that race, you can always take a break and just relax, and it's not, 120 degrees on you. And so I think it does live up to being one of the toughest races in the world, just as National Geographic has come out and said it is. And so it still goes with its motto. These mountains are no joke. They're three of the most giant mountains you can imagine going up. And it's relentless.
You guys agree too that it's
relentless is the best word. Whether you're climbing up and you're up in elevation and you have a hard time catching your breath, or you're down on the desert floor and there's zero shade, and so you're dealing with the heat, and then the next thing you know, you're climbing another mountain. So it was relentless.
How'd you guys get up the mountains?
Slowly.
One foot at a time.
Yeah. Is there some truth to that, that when you are running in a marathon or an ultra marathon or trying to do anything like that, it is a one step at a time kind of thing?
It gets that way at times. And it's like anything else. You go through ebbs and flows and feeling good. Your energy could be flying and you're just, and everything's just flowing. It's really nice. And then there's other times where it gets a little dark and you got to put one foot in front of the other and know, hey, I'm going to come out of this and I'm going to be stronger. But that's going to take me 10 minutes, just not right now.
My first and foremost rule with everybody on my team is always to remain positive, no matter what happens. If we push the vehicle off the side of a cliff, as long as no one's in it, if I completely fall down or I look like I'm going to die, it just always remain positive. So anything negative happens, you just spin it around and you make it a positive.
That's one of the things that kept me going. The first 100 I ever did, I met Harvey for the first time at a 100-mile race. And he said, if this is your first 100, all you have to do to finish is when you have a bad thought, replace it with a good one and you'll finish. And truly, I've kept that through all my races. And it is, you can always look at the 10th marker, a 10th of a mile and say, I can make it there. I can make it there. My number was 46. And so sometimes mentally I said, I'm just going to run 46 steps and see where I am and then walk a little bit. And then, okay, I'm going to run another 46 steps. So you play a lot of mental games. And when you see your vehicle, say, okay, I can jog halfway to that vehicle. And then they'll come out and spray me down and I'll feel better. So a lot of mental games going on.
Craig, how do you train for something like this? I'd be afraid that if I went out and I ran a lot prior to the race, that I'd wear myself out for the race itself. So how do you get ready for something like this?
It is a balance, but doing it, I've ran several 100 miles, so I tried to kind of incorporate a marathon type of program and then go some extra miles. Being my age, I was trying to train smart and not overdo it for this race. So it was just adding some extra longer runs and just being smart, listening to your body. When you're feeling tired, take a day. When you're feeling strong, go hard.
What about you, Jack? How do you prepare for something like this?
Just a lot of running. And I meet up with Craig sometimes, and we would go up Dixie Highway. I think that 1.8-mile hill was the longest we could find, and we'd run down it. Sometimes we'd power walk it up it, and sometimes we'd run up it, and try to put a lot of hills into it. And, it just really, I think a lot of your training has to be mental training, getting ready. I think we had... our team ran a really well-managed race. At certain points, we knew we were going to do things. We had spreadsheets all over. When this happens, this happens. When this happens, this happens. And so a lot of the training went into the planning of logistics.
Harvey, do you ever have somebody come up to you and say, you inspired me? Maybe it wasn't to run in an ultra marathon, but they say, you inspired me to face some other challenge in life because of what you do with your running.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's really, the inspiration goes both ways because that fuels my fire as well.
And do each of you planning and running in Badwater again?
Come on, guys.
I'm ready. I would love to do it again.
Jack's ready. Craig? Yeah,
I promised my body I won it at times, but we'll see.
I'll be back.
Okay.
Come on. Let's go.
Well, thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Craig Wheeler, Jack Corey, Harvey Lewis, they all ran in the 135-mile Badwater Ultra Marathon last week. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at wvxu.org. The producer is Pete Reitmeier. The technical director is Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney.